Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I would like to remind people that we're only weeks away from our upcoming healing weekend that's scheduled for April 29th and 30th here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's going to be a wonderful weekend of people meeting, re-meeting others who have been to past weekends and new people who've never attended before. And if you're going through this situation and you find yourself really stuck, or if you never met other women in this situation and feel isolated, then you really should think about coming to this weekend, which will really make you feel validated and loved and appreciated, because everyone in that room will know exactly what you're saying before you even say it. And it's so empowering to come out of these healing weekends with so much more knowledge and strength and knowing where to move for your future. So if you are interested in joining me and some wonderful women, please send me an email at bonkaye@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you the information. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my dear friend and frequent revisitor and co-hostess, Deborah Sutton. Hi, Deborah. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Bonnie. How are you?
I'm getting ready for the big storm here in Philadelphia on the East Coast. They keep saying we're going to be having a blizzard starting tomorrow night, and I think this time we're taking them seriously. I know in the past we didn't really take these weather reports too seriously because they would promise that something's happening and it never did, which was really fine with me. But unfortunately, I think this time they really mean it. is going to happen. So if you are on the East Coast and or in the Midwest or wherever the storm is going, I just wish everybody a lot of luck and hope that everybody's safe and doesn't take any kind of unnecessary chances, because people seem to do that, thinking they can outbeat the weather, but they really can't. And how are you feeling, Deborah?
Oh, I'm feeling good, Bonnie.
Good.
It's raining all day here in Texas yesterday, and today it's so cold, so we're getting a cold front.
Yeah. Well, I think spring is in the air, but it's not here yet. So, Deborah, tonight I want to discuss an article that you shared with us, and I was just so impressed with this article. It's calling Healing Codependent Shame, and you posted this up, you know, a few days ago, and it's written by Sharon Martin, who's a licensed social worker, and I don't know where you found this article, Deborah, but I was so impressed with it. Do you remember the one you just posted with this?
I read the article before I posted it.
Yeah, I was really impressed with this article. And, in fact, I did get in touch with Sharon Martin. And I asked her if she could be a guest on our show. But she said she's going in a different direction right now from the time that this was, you know, printed. But I asked her if it would be okay if we could talk about it on our show. And she said, absolutely. You know, she'd be more than happy if we would do that. And I know that this is a painful it's a painful subject for many of us to discuss, but I think that when you're living in these kinds of relationships that are just so distorted by nature, that often you do become codependent. And that's because you start doubting yourself and you start not thinking, you know, when you're getting gaslighted and everything's so confusing and your husband's making you think that you're crazy. And so you do develop a form of codependency on someone because you just don't trust your own intuition anymore. Do you feel that's true, Deb?
I do, but if I look at my life as a whole, I think that started with me long before I met my gay husband. And, being with someone that's doing that, I mean, you always feel like you're not good enough, like you're less than.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it only made it worse being with a gay husband, because I don't think I grew at all in that relationship.
Yeah, it's hard to grow in a relationship where you're constantly being stifled, for
yeah.
Sure. And I do agree with you. And, in fact, you know, Sharon had wrote this article, mentioned some of the reasons. So if you don't mind, I'd like to read the article, and then we can talk about it. And it's called Healing Codependent Shame. And if any of you would like this article, just write to me and I'll be happy to send it to you. Shame is a feeling that you're wrong, bad, unimportant, or unworthy. Shame defines you as less than or damaged. The terms and guilt and shame are often used interchangeably, but guilt actually refers to a feeling or belief that your behavior is wrong or bad. Shame is a much more painful experience, as it's felt internally as a core belief about who you are. Shame erodes your self-worth or self-esteem. It's also a huge barrier to change and asking for help. Where does codependent shame come from? Codependent shame can usually be traced back to childhood. People with codependent traits often grew up in dysfunctional families where they were told they are bad, deserve to be hurt, and are blamed for abuse or neglect inflicted on them. Other times, children mistakenly blame themselves for their parents' inadequacies or for being mistreated or ignored. It's my fault is the easiest way for their young brains can make sense of a confusing and scary situation. Unfortunately, these feelings of being damaged usually stay with you and become the lens you use to view yourself in adulthood. So as adults, we internalize bad things that happen to us because we already feel flawed. We shame ourselves when we criticize and judge others harshly. For example, you might feel ashamed of your husband's drinking or your wife's cheating on you. Neither of these things are within your control or things you caused, but because you're already disposed to believe there's something wrong with you, You see these experiences as evidence of your shortcomings. You blame yourself, and you fear others will blame you too. Chances are you've already experienced judgment from others about your experiences or choices. It's very easy for others to say, "Why do you keep loaning him money? You know he's going to use it to get high." When sharing your experiences and feelings is met with judgment, it's natural to stop sharing. What activates your shame? The first part of change and healing is always awareness. In an effort to protect ourselves, we tend to push away memories, thoughts, and feelings associated with shame. You may have a general feeling of worthlessness without a clear sense of whom or what brings on those feelings. Knowing what triggers your shame can help you comfort these feelings or beliefs. Do you experience shame about your body, job, relationship, where you live, how much you earn, or your religion? Perhaps you feel shame about being sexually abused, your son's DUI, your enabling his addiction, or your divorce. It can be very helpful to work with a therapist to identify painful events that are associated with your shame. A therapist can also help you explore your self-blame and whether the beliefs that you're wrong, bad, or unworthy are accurate. Shame lives in your secrets. When we experience judgment from ourselves and from others, we tend to stop talking about it and start minimizing, denying, omitting, and lying. Remember, shame lives in your secrets, and a life filled with secrets is not an authentic life. Secrets keep us disconnected and alone. In order to reduce shame, you have to be true to yourself and live a life in alignment with your values and beliefs. The clearest path out of shame is breaking the secrecy, and I know that's hard. Start with being honest with yourself. And meet your honesty and compassion. Try offering yourself love and acceptance through caring words and actions when you feel ashamed and unworthy. You can use compassion as a compassionate way to reduce shame. Find a quiet, comfortable place to sit. Close your eyes if you feel comfortable. Take a slow, deep inhale and exhale for the count of four. Repeat. As you relax and breathe slowly, say to yourself, "I am enough. I am flawed and make mistakes, and that's okay. I don't need to be perfect. I accept myself. Everyone has struggles and makes mistakes. In this way, I'm like everyone else. I'm completely lovable just as I am. I don't need for others to validate my self-worth. And I don't need to please everyone all of the time. I know in my heart that I am enough. My struggles and imperfections don't define me. I will continue to change and grow from a place of self-acceptance. I will offer myself love and compassion. I am completely lovable just as I am today. I am enough." Later, you can move on to sharing your shame with people who have earned your trust and really get it. This is one of the reasons people feel safe to share at Al-Anon or other such groups. People who shame and judge you are not the right people to confide in. In my experience, with careful consideration, most people can find one or two friends, a therapist, or a religious leader who can listen with empathy. Empathy and connection have healing powers to reduce shame. Empathy lets you know that you're not alone, you're not the only one who's been through this, and you aren't an awful, inferior, unlovable person. Overcoming codependent shame is tough because its roots are deep and well established. I believe it's possible to overcome shame when you view it as a process, and you can peel away the layers bit by bit. I don't recommend trying to do it all at once, or you're likely to flood yourself with painful messages and feelings and create more shame. Continue to meet your change process with self-compassion and garner the strength to ask for help. You will set the stage to overcome shame and reclaim your self-worth. I thought this was such a powerful article. What do you think, Deb?
Oh, I I thought it was a great article.
Yeah, I mean, I think that many of us suffer from this, you know, through my years of experience and your years of being involved with this. I think that many of our women do suffer from this kind of shame. And I think there's another number of reasons why, right?
Yes, I think it can be multi-generational, too, like we can just keep passing it down. And unless we heal this, we just pass it down.
Yeah, some of it is definitely, you know, through your family structure. If you've come from dysfunction, it's very easy to feel this way. That, you know, if you have parents who are screamers and yellers and who blame you for their, you know, misdoings, it's very easy to start taking on that role as, you know, the shame giver, you know, that you're the one who has created these kinds of situations and making you feel ashamed. But I think that one of the things that I loved what she said, and, you know, Sharon really, I think, really put this here, you know, for us, even though she didn't realize it. But when it says, shame lives in your secrets. When we experience judgment from ourselves or for others, we tend to stop talking about it and start minimizing, denying, omitting, and lying. And I think that happens with many of us when the news comes out that our marriages are, you know, breaking up. And a lot of women don't want to tell the true reason why. You know, they'll say, well, I don't have to say my husband's gay. You know, I don't want people thinking that. And I think that a lot of us internalize that and feel that it's our shame that our husbands, you know, we're going to be blamed for this. Do you feel, do you find that, Deb?
Yes, I do. And I find, you know, some of the comments like, well, like, how could you have not known that you were married to him that long and you didn't know? And comments like that just make me feel ashamed.
And that's absolutely right, because as they're saying, that when people look at you, when you do try to, you know, be honest, and they look at you, what are you, crazy? Or how did you let that happen? Or did you have something to do with it? So it only plays even more into our sense of shame. And that's when she says that chances are if you've experienced judgment from others, it's very easy for others to say, why do you keep doing this? Why do you keep doing that? Why are you still living with him? Why did you go back? You know, why are you dealing with him? So, you know, there's a lot of judgmentalism involved in things. People are very fast to give their opinions and to make judgments, and especially if they don't agree with what you're doing. Rather than feeling like you're smart enough to lead your own life, they have to put in, well, how could you possibly do this? Why are you letting this happen to you? So I think that, you know, it's not only the shame of living in our situation, but it's how society perceives us that's kicking it in even further. Do you think that's true?
Yes, and nobody's been harder on me than me. I've already been hard on myself, like asking myself those very questions. How could I have not known?
You know, And I think that's true for a lot of us. You know, we just, you know, get so deep into the situation that we don't even know how to, you know, get down and to try to change it because we're just living in the swamp there. And
we don't stop, you know, to give our own self the compassion that we give to others. You know, I find that.
Yeah, could you talk about that a little more, Deb?
You know, we try to show compassion and support in the group, and sometimes we don't give ourselves that same compassion. You know, I've been upset with myself for reasons like, how did I live with him that long and not know? And he was abusive, and why did I stay in with somebody who treated me like that? You know, I've been angry with myself. I think more.
Yeah, well, it's easy to when you feel you're stuck. I mean, Sharon has another really good article, and it says, are you in a codependent relationship? Because sometimes I don't even think that people realize they're in it. And she says, what is a codependency? You may be in a codependent relationship if you overfunction and your partner or friend or family member underfunctions. In other words, you put too much focus on doing things for other people, but neglect your own needs. Codependent relationships can exist between spouses, parents, and children. friends, and coworkers. For simplicity, I'm using the term partner in this article. People with codependent traits tend to be caretakers who get absorbed in trying to help, fix, or change their partners. Many codependents have relationships with people struggling with addiction, mental health problems, compulsive behavior such as gambling or sex or pornography, or narcissism. But even if this isn't the case, your partner is dependent on you to make some aspects of his life function as you need to fix, control, and feel needed in order to feel worthwhile. Codependency isn't all or nothing. I find it helpful to think of codependency on a continuum. You may identify with all or only a few of the traits listed below. The quantity of codependent traits that you have isn't as important as how much distress they cause you. If these relationship dynamics are causing you significant problems, they are worth addressing. Otherwise, you're likely to repeat the pattern in other relationships. Codependency plays out in relationships, but its roots are very much about how you feel about yourself. So codependent relationship dynamics will follow you into other relationships until you begin to learn to balance and take care of others without taking care of yourself. If you're in a codependent relationship, you may feel less and like there's something fundamentally wrong with you. As a result, you constantly try to prove your worth by working extra hard, striving for perfection, being overly responsible, and taking care of everyone else. But you're also afraid that your flaws will become known, so you become an overachiever and caretaker so that others depend on you. You fear being rejected and abandoned if others want to know your flaws, so you're more likely to tolerate abuse and mistreatment. You struggle to assert yourself and ask for what you want and need. So here it says, what does a codependent relationship look like? So you can use your checklist, make a yes or a no. You go out of your way to avoid conflicts. Are you like that, Beth?
Most of the time, I was like a yes person, but then I would reach a limit. I would reach a limit, and then it seems like then I would explode no more.
Well, I mean, I think we go out of the way to avoid conflicts, namely because nobody wants to live in a state of chaos and fighting, right?
But certainly in my marriage, I went out of my way to avoid conflicts.
So did I. Yeah, I did too. Okay, how about you spend more time taking care of others than you spend taking care of yourself?
That was absolutely my marriage. I took care of him. And
I mean, that's really true too, right? Yes. How about your moods are dependent on how your partner is feeling? So in other words, if he's not having a good day, then you're going to not have a good day. If he's having a great day, then you're going to have a great day. Your moods are depending on his moods.
Yes, that's very true.
Okay. You worry about what people think of you.
Yes, I did.
Right, I think that it's normal that we want people to think well of us, right? I think when you don't feel as good because your self-esteem isn't where it needs to be, you're always trying to get people to like you and, you know, think that they worry what they think about you. And here it says, no matter how much you do, it's never enough. Did you ever feel like that?
Absolutely. It's never enough, and it would never be enough.
Right, because it can never be enough because they're always looking for something to fight with you for. So even if it is enough, they're going to tell you that it's not. How about you feel like there's something wrong with you and you have to keep proving your worth?
That is something I always felt, that I had to keep proving my worth over and over. And I think that's why I've spent the past 5 years you know, single. I haven't even dated. I've just spent the past 5 years working on me, because if I don't fix me, I'm just going to find somebody else that's like that.
Well, I think that's very true, Deborah, because I think when we finish these marriages, people are so fast to jump because they want to feel loved again, they want to feel wanted again. And without building yourself up and finding out all these loose little pieces, you're going to find yourself back in the same situation. It may not be with a gay husband, but it will be with a husband who's not the right husband for you or the right man, because you're going to be willing to settle for something that isn't good enough for you just because you want to feel, quote, unquote, normal, because you felt so abnormal all these years that you've been in this marriage. So now if somebody gives you a hug or a kiss or they say, ooh, I want to sleep with you, you know, right away you feel just, oh, so desirable, and now somebody's going to give me that kind of, you know, feeling again. And we jump. We emotionally jump. We physically jump. And we haven't really healed ourselves. So I know that it's really true. I see that happening to too many women. How about here? It's hard to acknowledge your feelings, but when you're resentful, scared, frustrated, except when you're, but when you do, you're resentful, scared, and frustrated.
Yeah.
I think that's true too, right?
Yeah, she's pretty accurate in her description.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I think it's amazing. You like to feel in control. Well, I think that if we have no control, eventually we would like to feel that we have some.
Mm-hmm.
How about you work much harder on your partner's problem than he does?
Yes.
Did you find yourself doing that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they don't want to do anything, but we feel we have to fix their problems.
Yes.
How about you make excuses for your partner? Did you ever do that?
Mm-hmm.
Appearances are important. You don't want others to know about your family problems. I think that we all do that. We all put on a good presentation because we don't want people thinking that there's problems in our marriages, because most likely we fear that they're going to blame us for that. You know, once again, it goes back to us that we're at fault in some way or we feel ashamed in some way. How about you defer to your partner's opinions and wants? I think that's very common that after a while, because they keep pushing themselves on what they want, we give in to it. And kind of, I think that goes a part of losing your own identity. And you go out of your way to make him or her happy, but your partner doesn't reciprocate. I think that's very common in these marriages, right?
Stuff she mentioned, you know, that's what I feel, that's what happened in my marriage, until there was nothing of me left.
And sometimes you just give everything you have to give, and there's nothing left to give. You know, you're totally, like, dried out there, and they're not giving you anything back, you know, any kind of, they're not working with you on these things. And then it says you worry that if you don't take care of your partner, something bad will happen. Did you ever feel that way?
Every time he didn't get what he wanted, he threatened for divorce.
Mm-hmm.
He threatened that. But that became so old, you know, get a divorce. But then I would end up giving in to him because he would wear me down. You know, if he wanted a big purchase for himself or something, he'd just wear me down until he got what he wanted.
Mm-hmm. And here it says, you don't want to believe that things are as bad as they really are. Well, I think that's not just a codependent relationship. I think that's women in general. When you love someone, you want to think that all of these things that aren't quite right can be fixed, and you're the one who's going to fix them. But, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a codependency. But here it says, what you can do if you're in a codependent relationship. One is detach with love. Detaching is putting some emotional or physical space between you and your codependent partner. It doesn't mean that you're walking away, giving up, selfish, or unloving. Detaching means you stop obsessing about your partner and his choices and problems. It gives you room to be a separate person, not as intertwined as your partner. And she says, detaching can include setting boundaries, not engaging in arguments, leaving a situation, staying calm rather than reacting, considering your own feelings and needs, choosing not to enable unhealthy or dangerous behaviors, listening rather than trying to solve or fix problems, and not nagging, criticizing. Then she says, do something for yourself. Detaching is about focusing less on your partner. At the same time, you can begin to focus more on yourself. Detaching will begin to free up some of your time and energy for other things. And she said, you may need to get reacquainted with yourself. For many years, you focused on what others need or want, and you may have lost track of your own feelings, interests, goals, and friendships in that process. What do you like to do? Who do you like to spend time with? What are your goals? What can you do for yourself that would make you feel better? I encourage you to pick one thing that you can do for yourself and do it today. I'm not trying to suggest that getting a manicure will change your life. I'm just saying that putting yourself on the to-do list is part of bringing your life back into balance and health. And then she talks about getting support and guidance, which, you know, is very important. Relationships are hard, especially when they're not going well. The good news is that you don't have to go through this alone. It may not feel like it, but I promise there are people who really understand what you're going through. You might find some of these people at Al-Anon, Nar-Anon, Codependence Anonymous meetings. You might find them in an online support forum. You can find them throughout licensed therapists, so on and so forth. So I really think she hit a lot of key points on this article too, Deb, don't you?
Yeah.
I just know that a lot of this is really hard for women when they're in a beaten down situation, like setting boundaries. It's really hard to set them when you have a husband there, you know, yelling at you, you know, and making demands on you, right?
There were no boundaries in the marriage. I mean, and everything was about him and his needs. And, you know, coming out of that, that's one of the first things I realized I wanted to do, because I guess when you're raised up in a dysfunction, you don't have any boundaries for yourself. And
uh-huh.
That's what I was doing, you know, I just started setting boundaries for myself. You know, if I was trying to do something for family or something, I would just have to say no sometimes. And when people are used to you saying yes all the time, they get angry when you start saying no.
Isn't that the truth, Steph?
It is. So at first there's a little battle going on there when you first start to make boundaries for yourself. But, you know, the families that love you, they're going to continue to love you even though you set these boundaries. They'll be back around.
Well, you know, I think it's just really hard because so many of our women are in different situations, but some of them, you know, I would say that many of us came from families where there was dysfunction when we were growing up. And we really didn't know what a loving, kind relationship was about. Not all of us. I mean, there's some women who came from really very functional homes. But a lot of us didn't. And I say us because I'm including myself in that. You know, I came from a distorted kind of perception of what, you know, marriage was supposed to be like. So when mine wasn't clicking in the way that the fairy tales on TV were doing, I wasn't really surprised. I didn't really expect them to based on my own experience. Do you feel that has something to do with it too?
Yes, and I think that, you know, that we go to what we know, like, and relate, that's what we knew. We knew that dysfunction. It was familiar to us. Even though we didn't like it, it was familiar. So maybe
I'm sorry, it was what?
It was familiar, that, you know, whatever the childhood dysfunction that we grew up with, when we met these men that were dysfunctional, it was familiar.
Mm-hmm.
It was familiar to what we knew.
And I think that's what it came down to. You know, if it felt familiar, you know, then we thought that's the way it's supposed to be, right?
Right.
So, I think that some of these articles Sharon's written are really great, and if you would like a link to them, please let me know at bonkaye@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And, I mean, she has really wonderful self-help articles, Better Ways to Mental Health, When Life Feels Out of Control, What is an Anxious Attachment Style and How Can I Change It, 4 Signs You're Dating a Narcissist. I think we need to know this one, Deb, right? I mean, we've been through enough. Let's see, this one says, 4 Signs You're Dating a Narcissist. Thank you to Kimberly Sandstorm, LMFT, for the following article. She shares important insights in identifying narcissism and understanding the damage it can cause in relationships. And I know that many of our women will be the first to tell you that their husbands, you know, suffer from narcissism. We hear that all the time, right?
Right.
So let's see what this says. Do you feel unimportant, like an accessory or alone in your relationship? Does your partner exhibit the characteristics of narcissism listed below? While everyone has some narcissistic traits, only a small percentage, about 1% of the population, and mainly men, have narcissistic personality disorder. People with narcissistic disorder are notoriously difficult to be in a relationship with, leaving their partners feeling unimportant, negative about themselves, incompetent, alone, and sometimes crazy. What is narcissistic personality disorder? The Mayo Clinic defines it as a disorder in which people have an inflated sense of their own importance and a deep need for admiration. Those with narcissistic personality disorders believe that they're superior to others and have little regard for others' feelings. But behind this mask of ultra-confidence lies a fragile self-esteem, vulnerable to the slightest criticism. Partners of narcissists often describe a whirlwind romance, being swept off their feet, initially only to find that their partner's likability diminishes over time as the narcissistic partner begins to exhibit the traits below. Narcissists tend to love-bomb, excessive charm, and attention their partners in the beginning, and as the relationship unfolds, withdraw from the relationship as the narcissist's self-centered behavior increases. Many narcissists will label others as selfish and narcissistic, demanding respect for what they need and giving no regard for what their partner might need. You cannot convince a narcissist to see their behavior as hurtful. Don't even try. Do you know many narcissists?
I do.
Do they all fit into those categories?
They do, and they remind me, and from what I've read too, they're stuck in a childlike state emotionally. But don't feel sorry for them.
Yeah, well, here's some of the characteristics of signs you're in a relationship with a narcissist. First, they are charming. This is what's so confusing for someone who intersects with a narcissist. They are charming. Many move on quickly to a new relationship, often telling you that you're the one or they have saved you for the dating world and all the things you long to hear. Many people in the beginning of a relationship put their best foot forward. The difference is that the motivation behind the charm. For most of us, we want to make a good impression. But for narcissists, it's about the charm, behind the charm. Narcissists need constant feeding of their ego because their ego has been damaged in childhood by a narcissistic parent who rejected them over and over when they weren't feeding the parent's need for affirmation and admiration. Narcissists need for their fertile eggs to be fed. It's constant and unrelenting. So a child who doesn't make the parent look good, for instance, is then rejected or neglected emotionally. Number 2 is that they lack empathy. And I know that we heard that many times from many different guests, that they lack empathy. The narcissists are good at empathizing for about a half second, but quickly move on to what they want to talk about or need. They only sympathize, not empathize, which is a step to someone else's shoes, to feel what they might feel in order to keep you intrigued with them and to look good. The validation a narcissist needs to be challenged is when they experience their partner's disappointment or hurt feelings. To them, your hurt shouldn't exist because they don't feel it. They own childhood experiences with a narcissistic parent and damage their ability to empathize. Narcissists have become very adept at keeping people in connection with them. They learn what looks good and what doesn't, and they always want to look good. Do you think that's true, Deb?
Yes.
I think that's one of the major signs. They're always looking inward to themselves, how they look.
They can feel. They feel something for themselves. You know, I mean, I've seen where they can cry, but it's usually about something that's happened to them. You know, they show sympathy for themselves. For empathy for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Other people.
Well, this is kind of what it says next. It's always your fault. Any conflict or anything that goes wrong in a narcissist's life ends up being your fault. Practically everything ends up being your fault. The reason they aren't doing well at work, or the reason they aren't getting along with your children, or the reason they ended the relationship. Fill in the blank. Narcissists rarely apologize, but you, as a parent of one, will find yourself apologizing for everything. And narcissists find your distress, especially after a breakup, a source of pleasure. They will never admit this to you, but for them it becomes a source of power in the relationship. You made them miss paying rent, or you made them get that angry and lash out or go silent. Narcissists love to use silence to punish and control the relationship when angered. Narcissists have fragile egos and cannot bear to hear anything could be their fault. They will hurt you inadvertently or on purpose with their critical nature and then turn the tables on you, saying they cannot believe you would even be upset about something so small. To a narcissist, it will always be your fault. Very rarely, when narcissists are feeling good about life and themselves, will they accept blame. Typically, they will make a big deal about the fact that they apologize as a big gesture. This leaves you, as a partner, in a constant state of vigilance and feeling unsafe emotionally, and sometimes physically, when the narcissistic rage becomes so intentional and intense. Often a narcissist will tell you you are the narcissist or describe their past relationships with one. I like when it says that you're the narcissist, not them. The projection that's been around to deflect blame is so cunning and sometimes so subtle that you will begin to question your self-worth and who you are. This is the very worst outcome for a partner of a narcissist, losing your sense of self. Unfortunately, narcissists will prey on your vulnerability. And that one is really true, right, Deb?
Yes, and, you know, I think they get to know things about you, you know, your past, things that they can use against you.
It's true. You tell them things in good faith because you believe that they have that empathy because they trick you into that. Mm-hmm. And then they take that information and they turn it around. They use it against you to blame you for different problems that you're having in the marriage. Here it says they are constantly educating you. They think they have to educate you about anything and everything for your sake. You'll often hear, if you had just listened to me, or I'm telling you this because you need to hear it. The education is often compulsive. They can't help themselves to you, help you, critical and harsh. Without knowing they are doing it, they want to create a dependence on you to control you. They aren't even generally aware of this constant need for affirmation and feeding of their damaged egos. Unfortunately, you're likely to be subject to constant criticism of who you are, internalize the information, and end up feeling less than. And that, don't you think that happens to a lot of us?
I do. Yes, it does. It sure happened to me. I know that. Well, I'm glad to be free of it today.
Well, that's for sure, right?
Yes, you know, my life is peaceful. I don't have all that stuff going on anymore and all the problems and all his problems and have to worry about all his problems. I have a pretty peaceful life today.
Well, you know, the thing is that we can't let this hinder women who are looking for a relationship in the future. That just knowing how to recognize these signs and how to deal with them, you know, is step one, and walking away from trouble. You know, this is the biggest lesson I try to tell people how to learn this lesson. If you have a red flag of any kind waving in your face saying this is going to be a problem, realize that you cannot solve it, that no matter how much you love a man, your love is not going to make him change. I mean, if he has these issues, if he's a narcissist or a sociopath or any of the other ones in between, that is certainly not going to change just because you're nice to him. And as far as his sexuality changing, we definitely know this also. That's never going to happen, right?
Right. It's not going to happen.
I mean, it's not like we've known lots of people like this. You know, I mean, I have, but Deborah doesn't necessarily know too many more outside her husband and ex-husband. But you know enough people and you've met enough women and you've written a book on this talking about it, and you know that these men just can't change, right?
That's true, they can't. And it's not, it's the longer you stay, the worse it's going to be for you.
Well, that's true, because they're not going to change, and they're going to change you. And no matter how much you think that they're not going to change you, they are going to change you. I mean, there's no way that you can live in a relationship that's destructive and not feel that, you know, you're not going to change in some way. And even if, you know, like what I don't like is that some of these gay men will justify their misactions while they're living with a woman and say, well, we have problems anyway. No, we don't have problems anyway. The problem is you're gay. The problem is you're a gay man living in a marriage with a straight woman, and she doesn't know why you're rejecting her. She doesn't know why she's being hurt by you. And this is what I resent most of all, that these women who are good-hearted, loving women, who are good wives, who took vows before God, you know, to stay and to make the best out of anything that doesn't work right, and these women are very determined not to leave these marriages and start internalizing in themselves, why can't I make my husband happy? And the whole time it's because he's not straight, he's gay, and you can't make him happy. I'm truly convinced there is no way a straight woman can make a gay man happy unless she's letting him live an openly gay life in front of her and posing as his wife, covering up for him. Do you think that's true, Deb?
Because, you know, me living in that and not knowing what was wrong and trying to fix everything and never feeling like I was good enough, it broke me. I mean, it felt like it broke me. I healed. But at the time, I felt like a broken person.
Mm-hmm. You know, like I say, it's very sad to see what it does to us internally and how much damage is done. And how long that damage takes to repair, if ever. But when you are vulnerable, if some predator comes along looking for you, it's really easy for you to become bait for them. And they sense this. They can tell it in your personality. They can tell it how you respond to them. A lot of women walk around with what I call desperation because they just want to be loved. I mean, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be loved. But if you look desperate for it, we can guarantee you that, you know, it may not be what you're going to be thinking, right?
Right.
And, you know, you have to really have a healthy relationship. You have to find somebody who's kind to you. There's so many things that you have to look for in a man, you know, after going through these marriages that you don't make this mistake. When you married your ex-husband, did you know that his friends or family at all, Deb?
I had met his mother and father by the time we got married.
I'm sorry, I lost you.
I hadn't known him that long. I had not known him very long before we got married. Only then.
Do you think that was one of the problems?
I do. I think I left one bad marriage for another bad marriage. And that's
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying. If we don't heal ourselves, you know, we're likely to repeat that same.
Exactly. I know, and I think just women in general, I mean, it has nothing to do with necessarily gay husbands. Women want to be loved. I mean, we're brought up and we're socialized that way. We're nurtured that way. We read fairy tales from the time we're young about what marriage is supposed to be like and how our Prince Charming's supposed to come along and sweep us off our feet and how we're going to spend the rest of our lives living happily ever after with someone who truly loves us just for being who we are. And I think that's how we're socialized as women. You know, we need to be socialized more like the Wicked Witch in the Snow White story, where we don't have to have so much of these emotional feelings and fall for guys and try to fix them. I think one of the challenges that I see in women is that they're always looking for these men who are more broken than they are so they can fix them. I think a lot of times when we can't fix ourselves, we look to fix someone else. Have you found that, Jeff?
That takes the focus off of you and what you need to do to fix yourself, you know, and you get so involved in fixing someone else, you don't have to, you're not looking at yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You are.
I totally agree with that. So there are ways that you can build yourself, but I think what Deborah says most of all that's so important is that if you're not ready for a relationship or you don't feel that you want to be in one, you don't ever have to feel pressure to find somebody because you can just be happy living on your own. You can find that sense of self-satisfaction. You don't need somebody to make you feel complete. You know, you can feel complete on your own without having a soulmate or without having a boyfriend or someone who's going to make demands on your time when you're not ready to give of your time. And you don't have to feel bad at all because Deborah is one of the people who has been very happy on her own and feels very fulfilled. Am I right in saying that, Deb?
I feel very fulfilled. I have a large family, you know, involved with my children and grandchildren, and I really don't want somebody telling me you can't go here, you can't go there, or where have you been? Or I have enjoyed this freedom that I've had. This
mm-hmm.
is the first time I've ever lived on my own, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed my peace.
And I think that's the best thing is that if you can learn to love yourself and if you can feel content within yourself, you know, if you do meet somebody, it's nice because, you know, if you can meet somebody who will be able to enhance your life, but not somebody who's going to be taking away from your life. You know, that's the whole point in having a healthy relationship is having someone who you can enjoy life with, who you can share with. I mean, you're going to have fights and sometimes have disagreements, but you're on the same basic moral kind of structure and you believe in the same values. And someone who's not looking to knock you down, but somebody who's looking to pick you up. Because that makes the whole difference in a relationship. You know, it can really make you blossom and grow as opposed to just lay there and die. And that's what a partner needs to be in a relationship. You need somebody to nurture you, to make you feel that you can do anything because he's encouraging you with that, right?
Right. And it's not out for me. It's not out, completely out of the question that I wouldn't want to have somebody in my life. I mean, if I met the right person.
Exactly. We're not saying that you have to stay single, but we're saying that if you don't feel like meeting someone or it's not the right time for you or you're happy on your own, there's nothing to feel bad about. As long as you're happy, that has to be the number one thing. I think we cheat ourselves out of happiness by feeling that we have to subside to pressures from society. When we don't, we can just be happy, you know, just on our own. We don't have to have a partner. If we find one, great. But if not, that doesn't mean you need somebody to validate you, right?
Need someone to validate you. And I've learned that living on my own these past 5 years.
So, Deb, if you had to look back and say that you made any mistakes along the way, what would you feel was the one lesson you've learned the most?
From the mistake, you know, my mistake of marrying My ex-husband, so soon after I, got my divorce, and so soon after I met him, not really knowing him before I met him, that was a big mistake. I mean, I really wish I had never met him, because those years to me are a waste of my life. I wasted years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like I didn't belong. I was in his messed up world. You know, he drug me into his messed up world.
Mm-hmm. Because he was a narcissist. Because he needed somebody to, give him that kind of support. And you loved him, and you were willing to do it. And that's what they take advantage of, our love for them. So I think that's really important, once again,
like
the lessons learned.
I feel like he benefited from the marriage, even though he's gay. He benefited a lot from marriage, but I didn't benefit anything and left with nothing but a suitcase.
And that happens to many of our women. They are left with nothing. So it's really important to try to, make sure you're working with either a therapist or with a coach or with a support group. Make sure that you can manage some of these problems. And also, if you're having legal problems and you need some good advice and cannot afford an attorney, you can go to my website at gayhusbands.com, and there's a link there to a wonderful program called Just Answer, of which I am an affiliate, to help support our cause. And it's a service that you can ask a lawyer so many questions, or a mental health technician, or a coach, any kind of advice you need. For a small monthly charge, you can ask as many doctors, accountants, lawyers, whatever you need as far as getting advice. And these are legitimate, licensed people. But, if you have to get a divorce and you need a lawyer, rather than spend extra hours with him and getting charged by the minute, you can use this service to do all of your preliminary work so you know what you're dealing with. So if you go to my website at gayhusbands.com, you're entitled to a free question of any kind that you like, and they'll answer it for you, and then you're not under any obligation. But I think women need to take advantage of this, because so many of us are sucked financially by attorneys and we don't come out ahead, that this way you can become proactive in your own life. And the service is great. As I mentioned, they have so many different services. If your car breaks down, mechanics, home repairs, and once you have a small monthly fee, you can ask as many questions on every subject. There's no limit. So I belong to the service, and I ask many legal questions on behalf of our women. But if you have more than one or two questions, this is a great service. Go to my website at gayhusbands.com, and you'll be able to ask a free question there. So, Deborah, I want to thank you so much for being my co-hostess tonight. I love having you back every couple months to try to inspire the women by your work and your book, Signs of a Gay Husband, Identifying Closeted Gay Husband Behaviors, is available on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. And if you need any information on the link to Deborah's book, just write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll send you the link directly to the Amazon or to Barnes & Noble. Deb, any final words you would like to say?
Well, I just wish the ladies all the best, and if you're feeling stuck in a marriage, I hope, you'll get out of a marriage like this as soon as you can. Make a plan. Start there, make a plan to leave, because it's not going to change.
And that's really excellent advice. And once again, ladies, if you need support, write to me at bondk@aol.com. I'd like to send love out to my nephew, who's always listening to our show and getting his input and his insight, as he knows mine. All right, everybody. Deb, I love you.
I love you too, Bonnie. And thank you for having me.
All right, and we'll be talking back here again soon. Thank you so much for being my special hostess tonight.
You're welcome, Bonnie.
All right, talk to you soon. Good night, ladies. We love you.
Love you.
Bye-bye.